Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Double Cleanse podcast, a beauty, makeup, skincare, influencer-based related podcast with me, James Welsh.
And me, Robert Welsh.
Listen, we're just going to get straight into it today because we have a long episode. We actually have a guest today, Sophie or Soph from Soph Does Life. You may know her as Soph Does Nails, depending when you subscribed to her. She's actually from the same management that we are on.
Yeah. We are on and in.
In it.
But yeah, we are fans of her content in general, her videos, and now her TikTok, which I am now on.
What? You always have to plug yourself in some way, whether it's a discount code or a TikTok.
Robert Welsh, MUA.
Listen, maybe give yourself a month before advertising it, because if you're like me, you'll go on it for like a week and be like, I'm doing this, and then you won't.
Listen, I have like 30 drafts ready to do you?
God.
Yeah. I've been working really hard. But yeah, as I was saying, all her content is incredible. We kind of explain why in the discussion, but yeah, she's just so real.
Mm. Yeah, she's just real. The idea of this podcast initially was to talk about, kind of like the hurdles that we came across as influencers, starting from the very first time we set up a camera to where we are now. But it kind of went, not off topic, but we went a bit into different categories and stuff. So it's just a general talk about, you know, being an influencer. And still some of the hurdles, but also loads of other stuff.
Yes. And I have been also asked to apologize because throughout this recording, I say I need to go to the toilet twice, halfway through somebody else talking, and if it was edited out, none of it would make sense. The sentences would make sense. So I am sorry. I do say twice throughout this thing that I needed to go wee wee's. Yeah.
So. Okay. Cool.
So
Let's just get into it then. Well, yeah. I think it's too late for apologies.
I mean, stay hydrated,
even if it means you have to wee 8 times in an hour.
Exactly. Shall we?
Same. Shall we?
Here's
the show. So here we are. Hi, Sophie.
Hi.
Sophie or Soph?
I really don't mind. People ask me this a lot, but
I feel
I'll
like Soph because of your actual, your YouTube username fits better, right? Do you want to introduce, like, we've already introduced you a little bit, but tell us a bit about your channel as it stands now and what you do day to day.
Okay.
Your channel, what your videos, your daily activities, what your channel consists of.
Well, I wake up. No.
What time?
Way too late.
Yeah.
So I have a channel. It's called Soph Does Life now. I used to be called Soph Does Nails, which I think you said that maybe we'll talk about a bit later.
We'll discuss.
With changing names and everything. But yeah, I mostly do beauty videos, reviewing makeup products, testing videos, that kind of thing. Sometimes a little bit of fashion, a little bit of lifestyle very occasionally, but mostly makeup and beauty stuff.
Yeah, you're very, your reviews on products are very good. I find them really blunt. And blunt as in rude. Mm. I think people always think blunt means, but they're very to the point. I was like, do I like this? No. Do I like this? Yes. Is this shit? Yes.
Yeah.
Probably ever say it's shit, but you know what I mean?
I might use a different word.
But there's a few things you do. For example, like there's brands that you've collaborated with who you love some products from and some products you don't. And you're very open about talking about brands and their good and bad products, even if you are associated with them. So I think that's something that's very rare and I think really appreciated by people.
Your channel reminds me of like the good old days of YouTube as well.
Aww. I wasn't born yet.
So. Yeah, you weren't alive yet. But like when there was more to it than, obviously we all do sponsored jobs, but you know, when you were reviewing makeup because you enjoyed it, do you know what I mean? You genuinely enjoy it. And then you've got like, as you said, a little bit of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's just feels more relaxed and more real, I think, than a lot of beauty channels around nowadays.
Yeah.
It's a real pleasure to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, guys. This is exactly what I feel about you too as well. I feel like when I discovered both of your channels, I found you both around the same sort of time.
Oh, really?
And I was like, and I didn't realize at first that you were two different people, which obviously you get that all the time and it's probably really offensive. But
it's our life, it's fine. We're twins.
Yeah, I remember watching both of your videos and just being like, I love how you just say it how it is and you're not afraid of saying you don't like something. And I just think that is so refreshing because so many people just be like, look at this beautiful product. I love it. And they clearly don't.
I tried it for 2 minutes.
I opened
it just now. Open the packaging. Wow, I love it. I've always used this.
It's a favourite.
Yes.
Must have. Mm. So today, what I've gathered you here for, both of you today, is for a chat about we are influencers. Mm-hmm. We are actually under the same management.
Yes.
What is it?
MNC Saatchi Social?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's it. I've always just called it Saatchi because of like Saatchi Gallery and stuff. It's like,
Me too.
Yeah. So I think since joining management, obviously we've taken on more sponsored jobs and done a few bits out of YouTube that, you know, management can get you and stuff. It's made me think there's so much more to influencing and being an influencer than a lot of like how to become an influencer videos show you know. And I thought we could go for a few popular topics today but be a bit more real. A bit more like just, you know, tell it how it is. And just kind of like, I think like the hurdles that we've come across doing this and, you know, from everything from getting started to joining management to creating content, collaborating, all that kind of stuff. And just kind of having a real chat for anyone who wants to get going in what is a completely different, what's the word, like climate for influencers nowadays.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of videos you see online about how to become an influencer are quite...
And they're usually just about lighting setups. It's like, how to be an influencer? I use a ring light.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true, actually.
And then you're an influencer. Yeah. And so how long have you been doing YouTube now? Because it's been a long time, right?
It's been about 6.5 years, I think, now.
That's ages.
Which I can't believe it's been
that
long.
You're in your early 20s, right?
Yeah, so I'm 24. And I started when I was 18.
Do you remember being
24? Oh my God, you started when you were 18.
Yeah, I did. I know.
Do you
even then, I felt like that was quite late. Because nowadays people start when they're like 12.
Yeah, not that they should legally be on these apps, you know. It's always like 16 above. It's like there's a 13-year-old there.
Can I start by asking quite a, I guess it's like a, not an open question. What's the word? It could have loads of answers.
Yep. Open question is exactly it.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
Fine. So say you were on YouTube 6 years ago, which you were. How do you feel... From when you started, how do you feel it differs from now? Talking about subscribers, the way you interact with subscribers, the way they interact with you, work, having it as a physical job. Has the kind of like YouTube, I guess, sphere or world changed for you as an influencer from 6 years ago until now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when I first started doing it, I was only really doing it as a hobby. I used to watch Zoella and Tanya Burr, and I was like, oh, that looks like fun. But I had no idea at the time how much these people were making from it. And obviously, I knew at that point that you could make money from YouTube and that it was a job for these people. I never thought I would be in that position myself. I literally right. just started it because I thought, oh, this looks like fun. I go to Primark. I can do a Primark haul. yeah. Or, you know, I enjoyed doing makeup. I enjoyed doing my nails. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. It looks like fun. And I sort of started it not really thinking about where it would go or what would right. happen. And right. then when my channel started to sort of snowball a little bit and grow, I was thinking, oh God, okay, this is a real thing now. Yeah. And I'm starting to earn a bit of money from it. And should I keep going with it? And I never really kind of thought about turning it into a career until it sort of happened. It was
by accident, right?
Because it was never my goal to be a YouTuber as a career. I was going to be a graphic designer, but then...
Oh my God, that's what we wanted to do at one point.
You see, it was either that or a makeup artist, and then, YouTube like just happened.
Yeah, I feel like back when you started, and it feels like it's only been, what, the last 3 or 4 years where beauty influencers have kind of really kicked off, and it's been like, oh, beauty influencers, you know?
Well, that's the thing. I feel like there were a lot of, like, popular beauty YouTubers who have come and gone, even in the time when YouTube wasn't monetizable in the way it is now. So like, you look at some of the old bigger YouTubers and think, oh, maybe they weren't earning as much as the bigger YouTubers are now. Obviously that's going to happen with YouTube becoming more and more popular. That scared me. Sorry. I just hit a mirror and it felt fluffy for some reason. It scared me.
As plastic.
Yeah, as a person. You know, there's so much more money now in YouTube and Google as a whole.
But I don't think anyone gets into YouTube on purpose, but knowing how much goes with it.
Is that right?
Every single time we record anything together.
I can't mute it.
Wait, if you wouldn't hear it on the microphone, you would only hear it in
that
ear.
Cool. Yes. Okay. Sorry.
I didn't hear that.
Okay, good. I keep getting email notifications all the time. Yeah, I don't think back then it was... Now it's widely known that YouTubers make money and they're gifted things and, you know... They drive these kind of cars, which we don't, but you know, I do.
I don't.
you don't drive. You don't drive.
I don't drive, but I bought one.
And it's kind of like, back then, I feel like the response to, from audiences to beauty influencers was maybe a little bit more a friendship level.
100%.
And I feel like now, we bring this up quite a bit, I feel like now people do things like they hate follow you or they follow you just to comment things like, oh, you bought a new foundation last week. You know, and they're on top of what you're doing. And it seems like they've become almost like celebrity, like to a point where people want to discourage them a little bit more. Whereas, well, like you said, way back with people like Zoella, I was like, oh, she could be my friend. We can make bunting together.
Yeah, we
you know.
Cakes. I don't know what she did.
We could cut up jeans and make bags.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit like more of like your friend. Whereas now it is a little bit more like, oh, you know, a little bit more hard hitting.
I fully agree with that. I think when I used to watch Zoella and you know, all of their sort of Brit squad at the time, I watched them because they were relatable and they seemed like regular people and they would just film videos sitting on the floor in their living room and stuff like that. Right. Whereas now I think it is very much a completely different what's the word, like I don't know how to describe it, but like you say, people look up to them like celebrities. Everything is super professional. And I think when I started my channel, my subscribers were just very friendly and it was a very sort of friendship dynamic, whereas now I feel a bit more pressure because people sort of look at me like I'm this
like a brand.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a person or a brand?
I think both. Whereas I used to just feel like a person, whereas now I feel like I'm definitely a person, but I'm also my own brand. And I think a lot of people sort of view you as this machine that's just putting out videos and you're this like perfect person to look up to, which I'm definitely not. And I think a lot of my subscribers do know that, but people sort of expect certain things of you just because you are a YouTuber.
And with a bigger channel like yours, people are joining almost, not, you know, joining, but coming across your content probably daily. And when they don't know who you are from your previous videos, it's a little bit like, you can't explain who you are in every single video. But you touched on something really, I think, important, is that how professional looking everything has become.
Yeah.
And I think audiences kind of expect a certain... I was watching a video of yours yesterday, and you were talking about, you were like, oh, some people have suggested putting a plant in this corner. It's like, it's such a strange thing to... Like, it's good feedback. Like, feedback is great. But I was thinking about it, and what you said just then, it's like everyone has become a kind of, oh, your background should do this, your lighting should be a bit more like this. And even people who don't do YouTube have a standard that they want their, you know, people they watch to, like, achieve, and are very clued in on what they could do.
And I was saying the other day, I... my background is my, well, it used to be like my vanity. So I would do my skincare there. Yeah. So obviously it would become a mess on a regular basis. And this one day, I think it was just a bit more of a mess than usual. And someone literally said, could you please tidy your background? Like, this is a functioning room. It's a real house. Like I live here. But like you said, it feels like almost there is a set standard now, going back to what we said, like the old fashioned videos would be like, get a ring light and then you're a YouTuber.
Yeah.
It does feel like now a lot of people feel to start, even start filming, you do need that more professional layout rather than just sit in front of a window on the floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's weird. But then I went into doing that because I was inspired by people like Michelle Phan and like her, like beauty lot, versus like, I feel like, how do I explain this? I feel like I expect that from certain types of YouTubers, though. So, like, people who just do makeup, like Nikki Tutorials, Robert Welsh, I expect, like, but no, because Soph does lifestyle. So, I feel like the way you film yours, I know you have lighting, but there's a more chilled vibe about it. And kind of like, I feel like people are so, they know now what they expect, or it's almost like they know a bit more of the business side of YouTube that they kind of think, oh, you're that kind of YouTuber. This is how your channel should look, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm dribbling. Sorry, I'm like,
cueing back there. Do you remember, Soph, how you, when you started YouTube, what was your, like, filming setup like versus, like, how it is now?
Oh, God, it was so awful. So, back then, I lived with my parents, and it was in my horrendously messy bedroom, and I didn't think to tidy my background much. Well, I thought it was tidy.
Yeah, there's, like, a pot of Vaseline. Well. What's your background? You used to sit on your bed, and your background was like your bed wall, wasn't it?
Oh, so I did have that for a long time, but when I first started, like my first few videos, I filmed in front of my desk at my parents' house, and I had a load of products on the desk. There was like a pot of Vaseline, there's some random skincare products, there's like pots of pens, and just it's full. Like my shelves were full of like all this random crap, and I look back now and I'm like, I could have moved that pot of Vaseline.
Tidied,
yeah.
But I think that's, again, the standard might have not been up there to a point where you have to like dress a background. My background, I just got a new background, it's literally all there. None of it is like practical in any way to me. But you know, that isn't a standard that was maybe expected 6 years ago or 5 years or even 3 years ago, you know? What did you use to film on? Was it just your phone or
I had, it was a digital camera. It wasn't one where you could change the lenses or anything. It was actually a camera that my grandparents had like handed down to me. And I was so excited at the time because it was, I think it's called a bridge camera, you know, where it's like in between an SLR type thing a small digital one. It had quite a big lens and I felt like I was a true professional with this camera.
You got your pens behind you.
Yeah, I had my Vaseline, I had my camera. And then I do remember I asked for the two softbox lights and a tripod for my 18th birthday. And I think the softboxes were £40. I've still got some of them now.
We still use
use the cheaper lights because they're just lights.
Yeah. And I had this sort of, you know, vision of like, yeah, I'm going to make a YouTube channel. And so I asked for that stuff for my birthday. And that's what I used for probably about 6 months. And then I thought, okay, this is, you know, I'm still enjoying it. I'm still making videos. I think I'm going to upgrade my camera. And then I did get one of Canon's, you know, cheaper DSLRs.
Right.
About, I think it was between 6 months to a year into my channel, I think.
Do you feel the need now, as you were saying how you stepped it up a bit, do you constantly feel the need to keep stepping things up? Because I sometimes sit in my filming room, I'm like, you know what, I could really do with another light here.
We or another light. Do you feel so many different lights? Like, we still buy the, like the £40 Amazon ones. What's the brand? Like newer.
Yeah,
something like that.
Everything, my ring lights.
Yeah, though. But we went through a phase like last year, didn't we, where we kept buying different
new lights.
Like, these lights will work. We got like strip ones, like, because
we kept looking at videos and thinking, oh, the lighting could be better, or this could be a little bit better. Like, do you still feel... Yes. Like you have to constantly upgrade.
Oh my god, yeah. I recently upgraded some of my equipment because I was watching other people's videos and I was like, their audio sounds so much better than mine, their lighting is so much better than mine, their quality is better. My lens, for years I didn't have a lens that could zoom in, and so I finally got a lens that I can now zoom in. And it can film in 4K I definitely do look at other people's videos and think, oh, okay, what can I do to make mine better?
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's a standard you set yourself, or do you think that's kind of more from feedback from your audience, or do you think it's more like your need to not saying you have a need to constantly,
you need constantly upgrade,
but do you feel like it comes from more self, what's the word? Self review.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, rather than people being like, oh, Sophie, it's looking a little bit dark on the left, or looking a little bit dark on the right. Yeah. You know?
I think mostly my audience don't seem to really care that much or notice that much about lighting. So it's mostly for me, just from watching other people's videos and thinking, oh, I really actually like their video quality, or I like their lighting. And then I thought, okay, what can I do to make my own videos better? Not a lot of people tend to comment on the lighting or the audio or anything unless it's like really bad.
Really bad.
It was mostly for me, to be honest.
We always get, oh, you're too quiet. It's
I'm like, are you kidding me? I have to turn my computer. Yeah. It's always like, I can't hear you. It's like, well, I'm deaf when I turn my thing up. If I turn the volume too high, it's so loud. I don't get it. And that's another thing though, because I got those comments so much. I've gone through like four different microphones because I was like, what's the problem? It has to be the microphone. And software that I used to record my voice, I've gone through different options of that as well. So it's oh, there's constantly something, something. Yeah. But cool. Again, like you said, I think your first setup is like the basics of what anybody needs, really. The two soft boxes, the camera that records you in decent quality is literally all you need, really. Question. When did you first feel comfortable calling yourself a YouTuber or an influencer?
Oh, I think it must have been at the point where I started doing paid jobs, because up until then it was just, you know, I was earning a bit of money from it, but it wasn't enough money to be a full-time job. It was sort of like a part-time job kind of wage, I guess you could call it.
And like kind of a hobby as well, almost.
And it definitely was a hobby at that point. I wasn't you know, actively looking to make loads of money from it. I was just thinking like, oh, that's nice, that's cool, like I've, you know, earned a couple of £100 this month or something. But I think it was at the point where I started getting a few paid jobs where I was like, oh, okay, this can actually be a job. And then I started meeting other people that called themselves, you know, YouTubers or influencers, and then my friends would start saying, oh yeah, like, you know, you're a YouTuber now. And I was like, I guess I am.
Did people make fun of you when you first started, because it was kind of like a new kind of thing? So they're like, oh, she makes videos, YouTube. Were people a little bit like, oh, you know, laughing?
Honestly,
about it,
I think people probably did behind my back, but I was quite lucky in that, because I started my channel when I was 18, and it was probably about 6 months before I left like school forever. I don't really think people had the chance to, first of all, find my channel, because I didn't post it publicly. I didn't like put it on my Facebook page like, hey guys, come watch my videos. Please, I just kind of kept it all separate. And if somebody found my channel, then I'm sure they probably, you know, had a bit of a laugh behind my back, but honestly nobody really said anything to my face, which I'm quite lucky in that aspect, because I think a lot of people did make fun of at the start.
Yeah, I think people, I mean, it's kind of weird calling yourself like an influencer now, because there's a kind of
stigma around it.
You think of like, oh, you go on brand trips and
you go to Dubai during a pandemic.
Yeah, because it's essential.
Because my videos make people happy. Whereas back then it was kind of like filming yourself was a weird concept. And you know what I mean? Like it wasn't like, it was like you do it when you're kids, you know? It's not like a grown-up thing to do.
Yeah.
See, I felt, I didn't call myself a YouTuber influencer until, I didn't feel comfortable doing that until it was the only job I had.
Yeah.
Because like you said, I had it alongside another job and two other jobs at one time, actually, that... And, you know, YouTube would give me, like, a couple of hundred, like, pounds a month, or from a sponsored post back then, you know, it'd be, like, £50 for a shout-out, you know, kind of thing. And for some reason, I felt so funny about, I don't know, I felt like there was, like, you could only call yourself it when it's the only thing you did. I don't know why. I felt like
not professional enough.
Because then it seems like a hobby. It seems like a side job,
doesn't it? I think that's what, because that's what people saw it as. It's like, oh, that's something you put videos on the internet and that's nice. You
know? Yeah.
Even if I did get paid a little bit here and there, I still felt like people were like not really understanding.
So like, James, some YouTube.
And then, do you know what? I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm a YouTuber. And then someone sees me working at reception in the salon I used to work. Do you know
what I mean? I felt like
there was this idea that I couldn't be more than one thing, or like, you know, I had to live as this person online only, and if someone saw me in real life having a real job.
If you're doing YouTube alongside a regular job, it's a lot of your time and it's hard work. And I think if you if you're doing it, so people like you, Soph, used to do it kind of for fun, and it's like, that's nice to do. But now people know it's a career. I think people really dedicate a lot of time to it.
But that's what I think it was as well, is that because people know it's a career and people do realize you can make money from it. I used to feel like if I had, if people saw me in the real world with a, in quotations, real job, people would think I wasn't a good YouTuber or a good influencer, because I had to have another job alongside. I think that's what it was. So I wasn't comfortable to be like, oh no, I am a YouTuber. Do you know what I mean? I just can't afford to just do that just now.
I'm kind of lucky when my channel, when my channel kind of blew up a little bit, it was within 3 or 4 months that I could then quit all my jobs and just do YouTube full time. So I never had that in between, if that makes sense.
My in between was 2 years. Do your parents understand what you do?
Oh, yes. Yeah, what I was going to say is I think the most amount of comments I had about people not really getting it and not making fun, but just not understanding it was definitely my parents' friends, I would say. My parents, they didn't get it at first. And I think they were quite worried that I was putting myself out online. But then, I mean, I think they felt a bit more comfortable with it because I was 18 and they were kind of like, okay, you can do what you want kind of thing. But they didn't really understand it, I think, until I started getting a few sponsored jobs through. And they were like, oh, okay, this is actually a thing. And they have always been very supportive. But I think at the beginning, they were more just worried that I was, you know, putting myself out there online.
And what people would say.
But some of their friends, when they would say, oh, yeah, Soph's doing this YouTube thing now, they were like, oh, okay, like, that's lovely. Honestly, that's what it was like. And even when she would tell them about some, even in recent years, when my mum would tell them something cool that I'd done as like a job, they'd be like, oh, well, that's nice. It's all good experience, isn't it? And it's like, well, actually, it's my job now. But
it's it's a really good career.
It's really tough, though, isn't it, to explain to
I
like...
I think people, older people think I sell makeup.
Like,
I have this room.
They think you're an Avon lady.
It's like, what can I buy? It's like, no.
I think, like, because our mum's always like, oh, well, is it still going well? Like, I think they have this idea that it's all going to fail one day and YouTube is just going to shut down. And trying to talk about money without... like telling them exactly how much you earn, for example, or like, you know, mum's still like, you should be saving. It's like, I'm saving, you know, I'm a business, I actually
put aside £100
a month, you know. And it's like I'm a business, I have staff, like, this is like a thing. I think it's kind of difficult to, when a generation doesn't understand what exactly is going on online. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you explain what YouTube is and that it's not going anywhere? Because I feel like to them it feels like a newfangled thing. So whenever, like, people was like, I get a lot of questions of people asking, like, how do they explain to their parents that YouTube is what they want to do? And I was like, I think you have to have a really real chat with them and be like, you know, it's not for everyone, but this is how I'm going to work to do it. And this is how analytics work. And this is how SEO works. And if you really show that it's like a whole... business, do you know what I mean? And like, understand that, you know, you do have to work hard, it's not like an overnight thing.
You need to come out as a YouTuber.
That's what you do. Do you, when people ask what you do, if they don't know you, what do you say?
Oh God, I hate that question
so much.
And I don't think it's necessarily because I am embarrassed to be a YouTuber. It's more just that I hate the questions because everyone's always like, oh, like, how much money do you earn? Or like, you know, they'll
Why
ask that question straight away.
It's fucking rude.
We were having...
We were having this conversation with someone, I think an American the other day, like, I don't, like, in England, it's a real taboo to talk about, like, money with people, right? It's kind of considered rude. And we were talking to an American friend about this, and they're like, oh, I don't get it. And it's like, you don't talk about how much you earn amongst people, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is like, whenever people ask what you do and you say what you do, they're like, oh, how much do you, like, just immediately feel like they could ask you how much money you make.
So there I just was don't.
This,
There was this
digital marketing.
Digital marketing.
There was a guy who delivers a lot of packages and getting PR almost like every day or every other day is a little bit like they get a bit curious. Which is also kind of rude, like, mind your business. Like, what if I was getting, like, I don't know, all my relatives
medicine every day.
But it was kind of like, he was like, oh, so what do you do? And he looked at the house I live in, which I rent, by the way. I don't own this house. He was like, you must be doing well. And it's nothing, it's not a crazy house, is it?
Oh, no,
it's just like a normal, it's a house. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, like digital advertising or something like that. And he was like, oh, wow. And then I swear he was like, oh, do you get a lot of money?
No.
And I was like, I make like a good wage. I make like a decent wage. And I was like, oh. God. I was like, that's really rude. Imagine going up to someone. Imagine you work in like a cafe, right?
I know.
And they're like, I'll have free coffees. And you're like,
free coffees?
Yeah.
You must make some money. What do you do? Like, you want free coffees and you're paying for everyone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I do understand why people are interested, because obviously it's a new thing and people read about YouTube now sometimes, you know, YouTube will be in the newspaper and they'll be like, oh, there's this new YouTube thing, even though it's been around for years. But
yeah.
I do understand why people are interested, because, you know, nobody really knows how much a YouTuber earns and it's all this mysterious thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, it is rude to just be like, how much you earn? So yeah. Normally, I would just be like, I work in social media.
Yeah.
That's just
what I say. It's always, how much do you earn and how many subscribers do you have?
Yeah.
Oh, I try to paint the image that I work in an office at a desk. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, social media advertising.
Yeah.
I deal with advertising and in
spreadsheets,
advertising, offices.
Microsoft,
anything.
Make it as boring as possible. Faxes.
Yeah.
Just one quick question before we move on to what you're going to talk about. Does any part of you feel a little bit, like we said, it isn't embarrassment, but it's a little bit wary of what you say, because you feel like there may be a stigma around influencers and they're expected to act a certain way?
Yes, 100%. I think especially because of the rise of the influence, like the Instagram influencer. I think, I don't know how to put this without it sounding like rude or whatever, there's certain types of influencers on Instagram who promote the wrong things. They'll be promoting like skinny teas and stuff like that, and diet products and just random things that they definitely don't care about. And 100%. you can kind of tell from a mile off, like those type of influencers compared to an influencer who actually really loves what they're promoting, loves what they're posting, really thinks about the content that they are promoting to their audiences. But I think a lot of people think that an influencer is, you know, the first type of person that I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so somebody that just promotes like random shit, jets off to Dubai during a pandemic. And people might think, oh, you're one of those. But it's like, no.
Like.
I'm not like that.
But then it's also like, you don't explain it. You don't be like, I'm an influencer, but not like, I don't
not
do
one
it.
Of those.
It's so true. And I think what you said about promoting things like skinny teas, it's like all this kind of crap. It's like, you are grasping at anything, because who doesn't sell skinny teas?
So,
and it's like, I mean, I don't, and we don't, but
yeah,
and you look at the comments, and it's, people are genuinely like, I think you forget how influential
influencers are.
People are like, I'm going to buy that. And it's like, oh shit. And I get nervous if I really love something and I recommend it and someone says they're going to buy it. I'm like, oh my God.
I was going back through the comments like, did you like it?
I've got it yet. Yeah,
And it's kind of nerve wracking. So to recommend skinny tea to anyone on Instagram who's like maybe an 11 year old, it's like, I need skinny tea. It, like you said, it's the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And it is kind of this forceful, like, I don't know, just like is the heart's not in what they're trying to
promote,
So we'll circle back around to this, actually, because later I want to talk about the sponsorship apps that you can get.
Yes.
What often do things like that. So talk about that when we talk about sponsorships and stuff. But going back to the origins of every YouTube channel, you were called Soph Does Nails, first of all, right? So what made you, how did you pick your niche at the time? And what would you recommend for people who obviously because you've changed your name.
Yeah.
But like, what made you change? What made you skirt away from doing? Skirt away from doing? Is that the word?
I don't know what that means.
Me neither.
Yeah, I
what
think
made
so.
You? Yeah. What made you stop doing that? You know, what was your journey as far as picking a niche and then being like, actually, you know what, this isn't working so much. I want to change.
Yeah. So from the beginning, I guess I used to bite my nails when I was at school. Started painting them because when I had designs on them, it would stop me from biting them because I was like, oh, I put time into that. I'm going to stop biting my nails.
Yeah.
And then I was posting pictures of my nails on my personal Instagram all the time, and I was thinking, this is probably annoying people from school and my family and friends. So I made a separate Instagram, called myself Soph Does Nails, and at the very beginning it was literally just full of only pictures of my nails, and that was that I did.
Yeah.
And then I started posting a few makeup pictures as I got more into makeup. Obviously, like, it was just me like playing around with stuff, and I would post it on there. And then I started doing a mixture of makeup and nails on my Instagram, and then I got a couple comments being like, oh, you should start a YouTube channel to show us how to do nails. And so I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. And then when I set up my channel, called it the same as my Instagram because I wanted people to find me easier.
Right.
And so that's why my channel was called Soph Does Nails. And then when I started posting on there, I think my first video was like it was the TMI tag, like get to know me kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then I posted a Primark haul, a nail tutorial, a makeup video. So it was a bit of a mixture of stuff. And then when I actually sat down to film nail videos, I was like, oh my God, it's taking me like 4 hours to film this one video.
I bet that was so long.
Because they are so hard to film. Because normally, like, you know, if you sit down and put your makeup on, you can just plop your camera in front of you. But filming a nail video, you have to get the angle so right. And then I kept like blocking my what I was doing with my own hand. And like, I would put my head into shot and it would just, it was a mess. And so I literally filmed maybe 3 nail videos and then thought, oh God, I can't do this. But then I kept the name Soph Does Nails because that's what people knew me as on Instagram. Yeah. And it stuck with me for years because then people knew me as Soph Does Nails.
Yeah.
So I only changed it when I hit 1 million subscribers, actually. I thought, okay, it's probably about time I changed Soph Does Nails.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of
because I wasn't doing nails.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is it obviously didn't harm your channel in any way. Like, people didn't come to your channel and just be like, oh no, she only does nails, I'm not even going to bother to watch, right? Because you obviously got to 1 million. Mm. So it didn't harm your channel in any way, right?
I guess so. But I would get a few comments saying, oh, I never clicked on your channel before because I thought you only did nails. But then when I clicked on your videos, I see that you do makeup, so I've subscribed. So I thought, okay, people are thinking this is a nail channel, and I stopped doing nails like 4 years before that, so I thought, okay, I better change it. So I would say, if anyone's starting YouTube, be careful about what name you pick, because if your channel does blow up, that's then going to be your brand. And that's, people still call me Soph Does Nails.
Do they? Yeah, I say that sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. Do you feel like, do you ever wish that you for example, came up with a name that was more like James something, or like a fake name? Or do you not mind your real name being out there? No, I think real name, like, is absolutely fine. And like you said, I think if I had picked, because at the time I was doing men's hair and fashion, so if I was like men's hair and fashion by James or whatever, then I'd be in the same situation where, like, a couple months later, a couple months later, I changed what I was doing. So I think just using your name or like a stage name is probably the way to go, because then you can have freedom just doing whatever you want, right?
Yeah,
it's not true. That it tied you down in any way.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Be like, you know,
but
people,
feel
like
I've
said,
done that.
I do.
I kind of wish that I'd come up with a stage name or something, because the whole reason behind why I did Soph Does Nails is because I didn't personally want to use my surname, just because I was very paranoid about like people finding me online and stuff.
Right.
So I used Soph Does Nails, but I kind of wish that I'd used a stage name or something, because it just would have been easier.
I was watching a YouTuber recently, and she was like, obviously, she was talking about an experience she had, and she was at a doctor's or a vet's, and like, I heard my real name over the tannoy. I was like, I was like, in my mind, your real name.
Real name.
I was like, is that not your name? And it really confused me, but I don't know what her name is.
Nikki Tutorials.
Her last name is a
Turns
tutorial.
Turns out that's not her last name.
But yeah, I don't feel like that's safe, though. I feel like anyone can probably find, like, someone can be like, yeah, I went to school with Soph, this is her full name. You know,
yeah,
like anywhere if they wanted to.
But then we've got very average names. I think if it had like a really interesting, like Welsh is one of the most popular like, not because it's great and fantastic, but it's everyone is called it in, like, or the Walsh, UK, or Walsh, or Welsh, you know. So yeah. many variations, like, I've never felt a risk for my security.
Yeah, and, yeah. And,
no, apart from the time you put your address on the internet and we're literally neighbours. Like, if you know where Robert lives, you know where I live. Yeah. That's the problem. Like, I'm a couple doors down.
Don't tell people that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And this is the colour of my car. Mm. And this is my... I go to bed at this time.
Yeah.
Windows open.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That goes back again, I think, to, like, feeling like a brand.
Mm.
Like, yeah. you know, what are you, like, branding yourself as? Mm. Which I just think people don't need to do anymore. Because I remember when I first started and I joined, like, a fake management, which we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're like, what's your niche? What's your brand? Who are you as a brand? And how do you change that into basically saying, like, you need to pick a brand and then go along with it, like, and not yeah. necessarily be yourself kind of thing. So that, but that's another reason why, because they were like recommending things like that, like, right, okay, so backstory. There's a whole side of YouTube that's like men's fashion, and they're like men, one's called Alpha M, one's called teaching men's fashion. Do you mean they're
buffalo
all very like
legs?
Yeah, like leather mouth,
leather watch,
all that kind of shit, right? And they were like in contact with me, the people who used to represent these people at the time. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you need to think, you know, what's your name going to be that's really going to attract the audience that you want? You know, maybe it's like master of style. I remember was like recommendations. Like, no. I was like, I'm not doing this. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not actually interested anymore in joining. But that's the thing. Again, it goes back to just tying yourself down with something that you might not necessarily be interested in within a year's time. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing as well. It's good to remember it's like your real life as well.
It can.
Like,
you're gonna it does change. Become part of your real life. Because imagine if you called yourself fucking master of style.
Yeah.
And that was your name. And then you're
and then they're like talking about top 10 sunscreens.
Yeah, like top 20 lip balms I used last year. Which is the kind of content you make.
I make, yeah, next video.
But it's like master style. And it's like, this is about lip balm.
Yeah.
It's yeah, about a stylish lip balm.
Yeah. Yeah. All the clothes they wear. Dressing up my lip balm.
Dressing like my lip balms. Don't steal that idea, Seth.
I'll try. I'll give you credit. It's cool.
Yeah, credit, please.
I think it's fine to use your name, but then it must feel a little bit weird when your real name becomes a brand.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because it's like, but I'm just me.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, when do you separate yourself from... Because this is the thing, like, we live... You don't live in London, right? You live away from, like...
I live just outside of London, yeah.
Yeah. So this is, like, my online life feels like it doesn't actually exist. Because we're so away from all the action and stuff that it feels like that's a completely... Not a completely different person, because we are who we are.
You're not around... I guess...
Well, you're not around it. I was watching Selling Sunset again recently for, like, the fifth time.
Love it.
It's so good.
Absolute
and
classic.
And I was just watching that program thinking, if you live somewhere like LA, like a lot of YouTubers do, you are constantly around
these people
all the time. Yes. These people. Mm. And if you live in one of these content creation houses...
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, they're awful. We find them really funny. I don't know why. You're around it all the time. Like, your life is that person that you are on the internet. And that's not to say we're completely different people, but I don't sit at dinner being like reviewing my chicken, you know, like
this chicken is a bit dry. Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it for people with
But don't let me tell you. It's just like I feel like I have a really nice separation from everything going on. I do think that's one thing, like, that's important. Like, if you are aiming to do YouTube professionally, you got to know, hopefully, that one day you will reach levels like a million, 500,000, etc.
Yeah.
And having that separation is so important. So I think, like, revolving your whole life around it, like a lot of people do, like, non-stop working, not having a break, or don't, like... I think having dogs is probably one of the best things, like, take you away from everything. Because, first of all, the exercise that you need to give them, but also just being able to literally put down your phone and go and see them, you know?
Yeah,
for example, definitely. I think, like, having that separation is so important.
And I think I think it's more a case of younger people. Like, if you're starting out YouTube for the first time, you might not, like you said, have, you know, your own house with your dog, living with your partner. And they might be, their evenings might be like, oh, what other YouTubers am I going to meet up with today? And then it becomes a little bit clicky, and then it becomes a little bit more school-like. And it's like, what's it called when it's like a miniature world? Microcosm?
Oh, I don't know.
Something like that. It's like you live in your own bubble and only anything about that bubble matters to your life. And it's a little bit like you need to kind of have that separation, that breakaway for it. Like work. If you were at work all the time, 24/7, you slept and ate there, that becomes your whole life.
And well, that's another thing as well. Like, yeah, you're constantly around it. And if all your friends are just YouTuber friends, like what the fuck else? Like if we ever met up in real life, hopefully when the pandemic's over, I doubt we're going to sit there and just talk about YouTube the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you've got to be able to like...
be a normal person.
Be a normal person.
Yeah, definitely.
But I then think, also realise you're a business.
Yeah, yeah, true. I don't think I could cope being in like one of those content houses or even living amongst other, you know, if I was to live in London, I'm sure there would be a lot more people, excuse me, that I would meet up with.
Yes.
And it would just be a bit too much. I really, I think what keeps me sane is keeping everything quite separate. Mm-hmm. So I have my personal life. I have, obviously I've made friends for YouTube and I do have friends who also do YouTube, but I've also got my home friends and I have people that I see and I see my family who obviously I'm not talking about YouTube with them the whole time.
Exactly,
and I think I need to have that separation. Otherwise I would just go insane.
Insane.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's nice to have YouTube friends who actually understand what you're doing, because I think when I first started, people didn't like when they said, "Are you coming out this weekend?" I'd be like, "No, I'm recording a video," and that sounds like a complete cop out.
It sounds like, it's like excuse.
Yeah, it's like, but you don't understand. Like making a video is a whole weekend for me. Like it's going to take some time. So it is nice to have YouTuber friends or influencer friends who know what that means and you know what you're doing, what it entails. And but then it's also nice to have those friends, like two of my best friends who one of them works with us now, so she obviously understands everything that's going on.
Cool.
But those friends who rip the piss out of you for doing what you do,
like my friends
are always like, he's like, "Oh no, I don't watch your videos." He's like, just, you know, it's nice to have those friends that keep you grounded.
That isn't that what like, your friends are like? Like they'll watch the occasional, but then they don't really know what else is going on.
Yeah, what you're doing, anything like that.
It's nice to have that and not be surrounded by it all the time. So don't move to LA.
It's or London.
No, or London.
Move to where you want. Fine. We're not gatekeeping the
movie. We're not gatekeeping the
movie. I need a wee.
Okay, you go for a wee.
I'll join and pretend I know what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. Just come in and say yeah. Speaking of that then, you obviously started, you said when you were 18, and we were talking about how it was a completely different place like back then. Obviously now, people around that age kind of, they have TikTok. They have, you know, all this other stuff. Do you think at the age of 18, how old are you now, sorry?
24.
24. So do you think at the age of 18, you would have been able to handle your daily work life now or your weekly schedule now? Like, do you think that would have been something that you could have grasped and worked well with?
Oh, God. What, as if I was to do exactly what I'm doing now, but just when I was 18?
At the age of 18. And say you blew up. So you had, like, the same amount of followers you do now.
No. No. Well, this is part of the reason why I actually ended up dropping out of university. Because I went to uni for a year and... that was when my channel started sort of taking off. And it got to the point where I was staying up till like 4 a.m. most days.
Oh,
and I had multiple sort of times throughout that year where I just had a bit of a breakdown. Like, I can't do both, because how am I supposed to keep up with making, at the time I was doing, like strictly doing 3 videos every single week. Sometimes more. Sometimes I would do 4 or 5. I don't know why I did that to myself.
Wow.
But, honestly, yeah. And then in any of my spare time, I was trying to get my uni work done. And then if there were any big projects that were coming up, I was up until 4 a.m. trying to finish my uni work. And then I would go in the next day and hand it in. And then I would go home and film a YouTube video. And it was just like a constant cycle of just doing something. And like you said, my friends would be like, "Oh, do you want to do something?" I'd be like, "I can't. I've either got to finish uni work or I've got to film this YouTube video." And I just couldn't do both. And so, no, I think if I was 18 and I was at school still and trying to do my A-levels and it all blew up like this, I don't think I would have been able to keep it up. I would have had to quit YouTube.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. Or at least, you know, just post once a week or once every 2 weeks or something.
But then because, would you have got to the position that you are now with YouTube?
I wouldn't have done. This is the thing. So I think if I had stayed at uni, which obviously all my uni tutors were like, oh, you don't want to quit. Because first of all, it looks bad on them because many people dropped out and they didn't even do YouTube. It was just not the best course that I was on. Yeah, they all encouraged me to stay on and they were saying, oh, but if you get your degree as a graphic designer in a few years' time, you know, you could be on a decent wage and all of this. And it's like, yeah, but I could also do that now if I leave uni and just take that risk and see where it goes. And obviously that's what I did decide to do. And I was lucky that it did pay off and it worked out. I wouldn't encourage everyone to start a YouTube channel and be like, okay, I'm going to drop out.
This is what I think a lot of people don't realize is, yes, being a YouTuber can eventually pay well and give you a really good career. But I don't think I know anyone who is not living with their parents or wasn't living with their parents or had somewhere where they didn't have to pay rent and pay bills and stuff, who didn't work a full-time job alongside building up their career as a YouTuber. And I think people don't see that gradual success. They all think it's overnight kind of success. Yes.
And here's the thing. I think I've mentioned this before in a podcast. I very much think the success of how far I've gone on my YouTube channel so far was down to luck and recording the right video at the same time. And I know a lot of people like the algorithm, do this, change your lighting. Oh my God, I thought I need to
Should I move that for you?
No, I'm not done
it's
yet.
Just foam.
No,
it's
I can
foam
mix it. I can mix it. Whereas I'm like, well, if I didn't make that video at that right time and post it on that day about this subject, I wouldn't do anything. Do you think a lot of it is down to luck? And how much of it is down to hard work in terms of being successful
in a,
on YouTube?
In a realistic
world.
Yeah, I do definitely think it is a huge combination of both because I did work extremely hard at the start of my YouTube channel to, you know, push out as many videos as I could. But if I hadn't made, you know, a couple of trending videos that blew up at the time, I saw people doing, what was my video that blew up? I think it was testing Poundland makeup or testing Primark or something. And a couple of other people had done those videos and they'd done really well. So I thought, okay, I'm going to hop on that trend and I'm going to do that. And then those videos did really well and loads of people found my channel from that. And so if I hadn't made those videos, if people hadn't found them from that specific trend, I don't think I would have grown as much. And I do think there definitely is a big part of it that's down to luck. But also, if I wasn't as hardworking and wasn't pushing out all of those videos, people would have maybe clicked on my channel and thought, oh, well, she barely uploads. I'm not going to subscribe.
Very true.
So I think it's a combination of both. Yeah. But a lot of the time I do say, oh, I just got lucky. And my family kind of like, Soph, give yourself some credit. You some did credit. Actually work hard, which I do but I think is quite lucky.
I felt with me, I was really lucky. But then I also felt like you said, I was making content before. And it was like, I'm making this content. So when I get to that point where a video does really well, I also have all this content, you know? But I do think, what if I never made that video?
I had to force you. Let's be honest.
Do you remember? go on.
No, you carry on.
Do you remember the first time I recorded a YouTube video? And it was in London. And our rooms were next to each other. And all you could hear was me shouting at a camera.
Robert used to just shout at the camera.
Trying to record an introduction. But I felt, you know, when you feel really uncomfortable in a room by yourself talking. So it's like, hi!
But then literally last year, I had to force him to do this properly.
Year before,
seriously.
Last year.
Mm-hmm. I was like, look.
It was last year.
I was really honest. I was like, this is what I'm making. This mm-hmm. is like how it works and how you're already doing it, but here's how you could go a step further
and
do
no.
this full time. I was like, no, I don't get it. I had to force him to do it. But that's the thing, when you say it's not just luck, he was on the right track to. Yeah. Being able to do this as a full-time job because mm-hmm. of the content you were making and because of the views you were getting.
But you
and
just,
then you got those videos.
Yeah. You just told me you were in social media marketing. So I didn't understand.
I wouldn't tell him where I lived. But that's the thing. So you had all that content behind you and that quality content that was getting mm-hmm. good views. But then it was like, this is trending, do this, mm-hmm. do that. And then luckily, none of my suggestions were the ones that trended. But, you know, you caught onto those trends. So it was a bit of luck at the time, but also understanding the algorithm, I guess, as well, mm-hmm. without being too obsessed about the algorithm.
Yeah, like this number's here on this day and at 2 o'clock in the morning, people are watching
this match.
Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah.
It can get intense, can't it, really?
Speaking, going slightly off topic, but still on topic, when you create content, we spoke about this before we started recording, do you organize what you're doing? So I have a whole month planned and it never stays like that.
What?
Yeah, so I plan each week for a month and then it just changes every single week.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. I will sit there and I will write a list. I will go through YouTube and think, okay, what's doing well at the moment? What can I also do? And what things do I want to do? What new makeup is launched? And I will sit there and write a list. And then do I ever stick to that list? No. Basically, I don't really have a schedule because as much as I try to have a schedule, I just can't seem to stay on top of it. Something will come up or something will go wrong and then I will be slightly off and I'm just like, oh, I give up. I'm just going to do what I want when I want kind of thing.
Yeah.
I do try and, I used to be very strict with myself and I would always upload on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, no matter what I was doing. Mm. And I would prioritize my YouTube over anything. So if I was supposed to be seeing somebody, it'd be like, sorry, I can't come anymore. I've got to get this video up.
Yeah.
Whereas now, this year, and I guess since the pandemic, I've sort of let myself go a bit, but in the sense
allowing yourself some real life.
Yeah.
Allowing myself to, you know, not just have YouTube as my main priority in life and actually like live a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do try and, you know, stick to those days. Do I ever do that?
No, I think that's the thing. No, like, but yeah. That's the thing though with YouTube, because it's like, like the trending whatever can change week by week. Yeah. So like you may have your structure.
Especially with makeup as well. It's like one product. All my videos are filmed a week in advance. So if a video goes on a Wednesday, I filmed it the week before that.
Yeah.
So I can film a video about a foundation that's trending that week. And by the time it goes out, it's like, well, that's
gone.
So I usually film all my videos on a Monday and I sit down and I look at my list. I'm like, I'm not doing any of those. And I just kind of, you know, have to make it up on the spot. But it is, I feel like it's nice to have an idea of, oh yeah, I'll have a schedule. But in reality,
it never happens.
Yeah. Especially when you have no boss who's to be like, you need to do this.
Yeah, get this video
now. Yeah, it's kind of a little bit more like, I can do what I want. I'm only letting myself down.
You're only letting yourself down. It's true.
This is the thing. If we don't upload, it's on us.
Exactly. We're kind of in charge of our own.
We can't really get fired.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a point as well. It's like, were you freelance? Did you ever? No, because you were so young.
No.
Like, that's the thing. Like, it's completely different.
The only job that
life
I had before was working as a waitress, but I didn't. It was sort of for like events and stuff, so I could pick and choose what events I would do. And I didn't do very many because I absolutely hated it and the managers were awful and I ended up leaving. But yeah, I never, you know, when I left school, I did an art foundation, then I did a year of my degree, and then I left and I did YouTube. So I never, you know, had a regular job.
So it's kind of your first full-time job?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, that's
great. It is my first full-time job. I know, which is it's crazy to think about.
We were saying the other day, we were talking about a certain YouTuber and how it might have been their first time job when they were young as well. Mm. And it's funny to see the differences between how people behave. When your first full-time job being a job where people are very complimentary to you and very nice about you, and sometimes the opposite, but more so, you know, you have fans, I'm doing quote marks, and things like that, can really get to some people and make them think they're something they're not. And I think it's good to see that not everybody who does this at 18 years old and gets fed, like, almost their ego gets a little bit fed, isn't going crazy, like, you know, we don't see pictures of you laying back on your car and, like, you know,
not wearing a mask
and wearing a mask, spitting on someone, holding a really expensive bag. Yeah, so it's good to see that kind of difference between not everyone is going to turn out to be a complete asshole.
You know? Oh, well, that's great. I'm glad you don't think I'm an asshole.
Soph is classically not an asshole. What I was talking about that, you heard it here. Talking about, like, pictures of yourself, all that kind of stuff, we spoke about it briefly. Yeah. Did we do it before we filmed, or did we do it? We spoke a bit about personal life and how much we share online. I personally, and I think James as well, we never talk about or show our parents or partners or anything like that, because they don't want to be involved. So, and we're talking about house tours as well. Like, we get asked to do house tours. You've moved, I want to say recently, but it's not, it feels like not
it's
recently.
It's been a year now.
Has it been a year?
It's been a year. Can you actually believe
it? Oh my God,
it?
I remember videos of you building furniture.
Yeah.
It's so strange. God, that's gone quick. And it's kind of like, so you did show little personal bits of, like, this is what I'm doing to the rooms, this is how I've dressed this room as well. How much do you think is going, not too far, but what is, like, your limit when it comes to sharing more personal information?
Yeah, so I am one of the most paranoid people I know about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends who do YouTube, they have posted house tours and they're so chill about it. And, you know, everyone can do what they want to do. If they want to post a house tour, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But for me, I have always been very paranoid about not showing outside any of my windows. Not showing the full house tour, because I was thinking, you know, if I've just moved in here, somebody might be able to find the house online.
Your house, yeah.
And see the layout and be like, oh yeah, that's Soph's house.
All your makeup will be gone. All your Korean concerts gone.
So, and I do worry about that. And even if I'm, because I do have a vlog channel, but I rarely vlog when I'm out and about, because I don't even want people to see, you know, if I'm driving somewhere in the car, I don't want them to see like a sign in the background that has this on it. Or, you know, just little things like that, which most people would think, oh, nobody would do that, that's ridiculous, but it has happened to people that I know. And I'm not gonna, like, name anyone, but there's, you know, some of my YouTube friends posted a house tour, showed sort of like outside their windows and their back garden and stuff, and then a couple of days later people show up at the house because they're like, oh, I lived in the area and I recognized that was your house. And then what do you do in that situation?
What do you do? You know? Like, you, oh my God, that's awful.
So that kind of stuff does scare me, because it is scary. I don't want strangers turning up in my house.
No, like, at all. I think I'm super paranoid as well about just everything in general. I could, my partner could take our dogs for a walk and I'd be like, well, none of them are coming back. You
know? Yeah.
That's them gone. That's them gone now. And I'm at the window. Yeah. Like, what?
There have been times, like, where we live now that I've been recognised as either one of us. Mm. And there are times where I intend to be like, oh no, actually I get that a lot. Do you know what I mean? Just because they can see me walking to my house. Yeah. Or like they know the road that I'm living down. And, and it's fine. Not that everyone's, you know, a stalker or anything, but it still gives you that sense of like, it's just that sense of it like coming into the real world. And you're like, oh yeah, shit, actually people might know who I am.
And
sometimes
you're potentially open to millions of people. Like, you know, you have a million subscribers, a million people know who you are at some point. That's a lot of people.
I had a break,
especially in the UK as well.
I don't want to say it like lightly, but I had a bit of a breakdown. Not a breakdown, but I had a bit of like just a panic moment where I was just sat there for a couple of minutes thinking, you know, obviously a million people don't watch every single video I post, but a million people know who I am, and that feeling's actually terrifying.
I had that at 50,000. I got to 50,000, and because like maybe two months before I was on 8,000, and then it went up to 50, I was like, shit.
Yeah.
I don't want this to happen. I don't want it to happen. You know, it kind of did you ever experience that point, especially being younger as well?
Yeah.
Where it was like, shit, this is it. this is gonna happen.
Yeah, because my friends, you know, I'd hit a certain milestone and then my friends would message me and be like, oh, this is the amount of people that can fit in Wembley Arena, or this is more than the population of this place. And I was just like, oh my God,
when you get
I can't imagine.
When you get the plaques from YouTube, it's like, you get that letter and it's like, it tells you how many people it is. It's like, hang on a minute.
This is how many people can stand outside your house.
Yeah.
Is that many people can fit in your garden and look at you?
Do you ever, this might be a bit of a personal question, but have you ever felt like there's been any friendships that have been made or any like family members who kind of try to get in on what you're doing and benefit from what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think necessarily, I don't know, not with people that I still like have in my life.
Yeah.
And not people that I was ever...
You knew before.
Really like good friends with, but there definitely have been people that have popped up that I would go to school with and they would message me like, oh hey, like you're doing so well now, will you help me with this job interview? I'm going to interview at Superdrug and I was wondering if you could like send me some
like a character, like,
yeah.
What,
basically this girl that I didn't even really know, I wasn't friends with her at school, never spoke to her. She was actually not very nice to one of my friends. And then she messaged me on Facebook like, oh, I'm going for a job at Superdrug. Could you send me some of your like photos of your makeup with Revolution or something? And I was thinking, how is this helping with your interview at Superdrug?
Yeah.
I think she wanted to just be like, oh, I know her kind of thing.
And she uses Superdrug makeup.
Yeah, so it was weird. It was very strange. And then I was thinking about like, oh, what do I reply? Because I don't want to seem rude. And I don't really know what to say. And so I read it and I was kind of thinking like, should I reply? And then I didn't reply for a day. And then the next day she sent me a message saying, rude, lol.
Oh,
because
fine,
I hadn't
fine.
Replied.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, I'm definitely not going to help
leave
you.
Out. Yeah.
But yeah, there has been a few people that at the start, you know, people that I would do collabs with on YouTube, but not like actually in person, you know, where you just sort of like shout out their channel.
Yes.
And there was a couple of people that I met up with and all they wanted to talk about was like, oh, so like, what free stuff have you been sent? And, oh, we're going to this event. Is there going to be a goodie bag and stuff? And that was all they wanted to speak about. And I was like, okay, so you don't actually want to get to know me. It's more just about
the event.
Yeah. And so then I just didn't speak to those people again.
Yeah.
But
It's tough,
yeah, it's
isn't it?
Weird.
Because I feel like, as influencers and YouTubers, you know that the right collaborations can help your channel. So you know that's at the back of your mind, but then it's also like, oh, like, do they actually... like, do they want to be friends? Like, is this, like, the last time we're going to speak once we collab? Or I think, like, I've luckily never done a collab like that before.
I think that goes with what we've mentioned as well on the podcast before, is when you subscribe to someone or you interact with someone, it's kind of like voting for some, you know, with your voice and with your choices. If you if you're an influencer and you choose to collaborate with somebody, then that should be because you appreciate their content and you want people to know,
I
think this person's a good person.
Yeah.
I think their content's amazing. That's and it shouldn't just be like, yeah, one time, okay, and then you're
like,
gone.
Oh, you have enough subscribers.
So it's kind of like, it's not, it shouldn't just be about subscriber numbers. It should be about what's the word, representing the people that you associate with. I think represent you as a person as well. Not all the time, not like, it's not like surround yourself with the right people, more like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you appreciate each other's content and you want people to know that. That's what I'm trying to say. You want people to know that you know, respect each other, and that's the kind of content you like as well,
that you would have on your channel, that you would like. Right, going way off topic to what we were just talking
way
about.
Way that way.
Because we had a secret break. let's talk about gifting, PR, and sponsorships. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's so much... what's the word?
Stigma.
Stigma around influencers accepting sponsorships. And I understand why. But you as an influencer, when do you... Have you ever felt... like bad taking sponsorships because of the way people see sponsorships?
Yes.
And how do you overcome that?
I definitely do. I think sometimes when it's worked out where I've taken on a few sponsorships and then they're all suddenly like, oh, can you upload them this one week? And I'm like,
in that
oh,
one
God,
week, and it's like, oh,
I don't want to upload them all in one week because that makes me look bad, but it shouldn't make me look bad.
No.
This is the thing. Obviously, this is a job and I only work with brands that I genuinely would use their products, yeah, promote their products, not just random things. But then part of me still feels guilty for doing an ad, which doesn't make any sense because, you know, I should be proud to be doing that ad and I am. Yeah. But then also I think sometimes people have this idea that if you are doing a sponsorship, you don't like the product and you're just doing it for money.
Just for money.
Yeah, because people do sometimes comment like, oh, another ad. And it's like, well, yeah, why would I not do an ad?
If you like the brand, and they're paying you, it's like, yeah, why wouldn't you? I love your brand.
Of course you would do it. And I think anyone in the real world, if the roles were reversed and a brand came to them that they love and they were like, hey, do you want to promote us? We'll give you some money if you just talk about us. Of course, they would be like, yes.
Yeah, especially if it's something you've already used. And obviously we're under the same management, so I'm guessing it's the same kind of deal. But my manager will always be like, James would love to try your products, you know, and they're amazing. And that's one perk I would say of having a manager is that you get to make those demands to the brands that, like, I want to try your products first. If you don't like it, your manager can tell them. You don't have to go for the awkward stage of saying, I don't want to work with you. And, you know, even if you've never tried the product before, you've never heard of the brand, if you try the products and you actually genuinely really like it and they're doing great things for you, then why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's different because, like, makeup you can apply and be like, oh yeah, I like that, I'll take the job.
Of course. Yeah. I feel like I had this comment once, I can't remember what we were talking about, but it was like, oh, they weren't like being rude, but I was talking about someone's palette. I was like, oh, it feels like a cash grab. Mm. And I was like, well, yes. I mean, they're trying to get cash. But also, if I said, like, imagine if, like, a brand that you've loved forever comes to you, like you said, Soph, and is like, do you want to do this? And we're going to pay you, and you get to make your own creation with this brand that you've idolized and loved. Like, of course you want to be part of that brand, and you want to be part of that product that you, like, adore. Like, why would you not?
Why would you not?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But I get what you're saying, like, when you feel guilty, I always compare it to, you know, when you go to a shop and, you know, it's that one time you haven't shoplifted and you walk out or like you're walking out and you feel like there's a security guard at the door and you know you haven't done anything, but you're like, oh my god. And you walk like this.
It makes you feel like you've done something. Like when you go through passport control it's at the airport and they're going to arrest me.
Yeah, they're going to arrest me for no reason.
It's that guilt of, like, I haven't done anything wrong, but I feel like I'm already being judged by the people that are watching me. Do it, you know?
And that's, again, this whole, like, being a brand versus a person. Like, during COVID, when COVID first started, I don't know what it's like for you, but AdSense and sponsorship, we joined the management at the beginning of COVID, basically. So we had no jobs for a couple of months.
I
think a lot of people didn't have. And AdSense went right down because people weren't advertising. And and so when everything started picking back up, I think I had like a month's worth of jobs and contracts to fulfill. So I had to explain to people, they're like, oh, another advert. And I was like, listen, you just bear in mind, first of all, that I am a real person who has contracts. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not being like, oh yeah, I'll take that one, I'll take that one. Like, COVID happened for everyone, and this is how it affected my job, and this is why I've got 5 sponsorships in a row, because
but a lot of influencers were apologizing. They were like, I'm really sorry, but but it's, again, the companies, they want it done at this time, and you with your contract have to agree to that, you know. And actually a lot of companies were very open to changing it to the next week as well, which was nice. But there is a sense of guilt, but there's always going to be that one comment, this advert's very long, this advert seems out of place, I've never heard you talk about this before. And it's like, well, yeah, I haven't, but I use it and now I'm advertising
and I'm recommending it.
Even if you have, like, there's a brand I absolutely love called COSRX, right? I've used them the whole time my channel's been alive, right? I absolutely love them. And you can get 10% off of... But then I did a paid job with them and people were like, oh, a sponsorship, how do I know? It was like, well, if you watch my channel and if you know me, first of all, you know this is my stance on sponsorships, but also they make an appearance in every week in every video. And then I've got another, like, a sponsorship with them coming up this weekend, well, which would be past now. But I know I'm gonna get comments like, oh, another COSRX, but it's because I fucking love, like, I use them all the time. And you just wish, it's annoying that we have to keep being like, but I also understand why, because, like we were saying before,
those influencers that we're embarrassed almost to be like, oh yeah, we're an influencer because...
Pretending we don't have an Amazon affiliate link.
Yeah, yeah. Taking jobs left, right and centre that make no sense whatsoever to them as a person, to them as a brand or, you know, it's like...
I had a comment the other day and it was, I was talking about the new brow gel from Sample Beauty. 10% up. No, I don't have any code with them. And I really like it. And when I find a brow gel that I really like, actually any product, I've been a makeup artist since I was 18. And my whole life has been talking about beauty and makeup. Now, like, is this a sponsored ad? Because I said how much I like the brow gel in a picture. And like, is this sponsored? Because I don't know anyone who would be so happy about a brow gel.
What?
And I'm like, well, first of all, listen, first of all, I'm with management who would make sure by UK law that I say it's an advert. But also as well, what else am I going to talk about? Imagine if being a beauty influencer and a makeup artist, if I put a picture of like, I don't know, muffins. I'm like, made these muffins today. It's like, I don't fucking, this
skinny
isn't a
muffins,
cooking channel.
Shit yourself.
Exactly. Overnight oats muffins. And it's not like, you know, what it's not expected. So what else am I going to talk about? If I find a product I really like, as you would in a video... that doesn't make... The more I talk about it now, the more it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that's like...
That's
like
so
why?
True.
And you're following me. What are you expecting from me now?
I think
a lot... Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Sorry, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think as long as you're open about sponsorships, I don't think it should be such a taboo, but it's difficult as an influencer to be like... Keep being like, I genuinely like these, you know, every single time we do a sponsorship.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think a lot of people think that you're doing these hidden ads. And sometimes if I do like something and I just want to put it on my story, I feel like I have to say, this isn't an ad, by the way.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have to say that. Yeah. But I think a lot of people don't realise that if you... Well, I know it's different for different countries, but in the UK, if you post an ad, you have to say it's an ad. You can't just do these...
You have to say it.
But then I guess some people do these sneaky ads and then maybe they never get found out for it. So I see why not everyone is as trusting.
I think like
because I've seen it before.
Oh, yeah, God, I see it all the fucking time. But I think because when it first started, like influencing and sponsorships, that law wasn't in place. Like because it was so new, there wasn't anyone saying like this is how it should work. So it is recent, as in maybe the last 2 years. Maybe?
Well, even the UK laws tightened up. What, like a month ago, it got even more strict as far as filters. And
nothing that would affect us.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, you're fine. Yeah.
So like I do understand why. And the way some American influencers, like the male, like the men's grooming male influencer space is just awful for adverts and not disclosing an advert.
Yeah,
I'm talking about you.
definitely won't be listening to this.
So I understand why there's that distrust there because like, I think that like not disclosing sponsorships is like steeped within the history of being an influencer.
Yeah. Which is a shame.
But I wanted to talk about those sponsored apps. So you don't know about these.
I don't know what you're talking
about. But I first joined them when I first became a YouTuber, where you can sign up and then you get all these brands that are like, if you talk about our product, we'll give you £50, 100, 500. So I can't remember what any of them are called now.
One of them was called Famebit.
Famebit.
I was a member of that one.
I was too. But it'd be awful stuff like mini travel version of this perfume for £50.
It was random stuff, wasn't it?
So
like
strange.
This little Bluetooth mini speaker or
100 toilet rolls. Like it was really odd.
So it was kind
How
of like
do you incorporate that into your content?
People do it. They just any old
See,
shit.
When I first started, I was part of Famebit and I did do one sponsorship on there, which
I
was
did too.
These liquid lipsticks and they just wanted a lip swatch video, so I was like sure I can do that, but when I received them I then realized that they didn't even ship to the UK, so I was like shipped me over these
to
liquid
you?
lipsticks. And so then I had to put in the video because then I think I messaged them and they were like, oh no, well you've already agreed to it because
you've signed the contract,
you know, at the time I didn't have management. I think I had like 10,000 subscribers or something. It was one of the first sponsored things that I'd done, and so I felt like I didn't really have any control. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was like, yeah, I like your lipsticks, but what do I do? Because most of my audience are in the UK. They can't buy them.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, well, sorry, you've already agreed to it now. So I just did it. And then I think I had to write in the description, like, sorry, they don't ship to the UK, but if you're a US follower, you can get them.
No one can get these, but...
Yeah.
Just watch.
No one that watches you can buy them.
Yeah, so that was
I did a charcoal toothpaste
advert for that. And that was the only thing I did. And they were very, very good. They actually were like, oh, let's do this off Fame Bit. And they paid me a little bit more for it. So they're really good about it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, these are the apps where you can do skinny tea. Whatever other old shit, you know, all the
kind of Wish. It's like Wish has put all their shit on an app.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, it's like Wish, but just for ads.
Yeah.
Like this, a gel manicure set. I need a wig again. What is wrong with me?
It's all the 10 coffees we drank. But so this is where, like you said, you didn't have management and I didn't at the time either. And I remember taking a job back then that I was tied into for a year because I didn't know how to read contracts. The perks of having a management team. So when we first started this podcast, me and Robert actually talked about never doing sponsorships or how uncomfortable we felt with doing sponsorships.
Really?
Not because we thought they were bad, but because of the stigma behind them and everything we just talked about.
Yeah.
But when we got management, I think we noticed how much power we have, how in control we are and could be over contracts as opposed to without a manager. And I think that's something I wish people knew, subscribers knew when it comes to our sponsored content, is like, well, this is actually how it played out. Like, this is what they wanted. I was like, no, I'm going to do this instead. Mm-hmm. And they were like, fine. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that's something, because not having management and having like brands take advantage of you, I think is something that is like unacceptable nowadays that brands still do.
Now, our tools online where you can see how much you're following, how much you should be getting
paid. Social Blue Book?
Social Blue Book,
I never believed that.
Oh, really?
I didn't either.
I had management. Because I didn't have management, I think, until I had... It must have been like 400,000 subscribers or something. So I've only been with Saatchi. Well, actually, I think it's probably been around 3 years now, but it still feels quite new, which is really weird. Yeah. But I was by myself for a long time trying to deal with my own ads and my own sponsorships. Mm-hmm. And I looked on Social Blue Book and I was like, there is no way that is accurate.
Right?
And I did one job where I signed the contract for it and it was, I think it was 10 videos, but it was like fancy dress, like costume videos. And I think I've said in like a thing before, I'm not going to say the brand, but it was 10 videos for £1,000, and which is obviously an amazing amount of money at the time. And I was like young, but then when I actually worked out how many hours I was spending on each video, because they were like full on fancy dress, like you know,
10 videos.
I then realized
that's enough to ask.
Yeah, I know. And it was all within like Yes, so it was £100 a video, but the videos were like really sort of creative and like loads of makeup and in-depth and stuff. Mm. And then I realized afterwards, like I mentioned it to someone and they were like, Soph, that's not like, that's not cool.
Yeah.
And the amount of time that I was spending on each video, I worked out that I was earning below minimum wage just to do these like videos. But
it's not something you think about, because you think when you're doing your own thing in your own time, it's like, oh, wow, £1,000 is great. I can work from home and do this myself.
I was thrilled.
That's great, yeah. Mm. So, but when you work it out like you did, like actually that's like not manual labour.
No,
what's the word? Yeah, it's just like not basic.
Not being paid enough. Yeah, not basic pay. That's it. Not manual labor.
But I was so excited.
Yeah,
to just have a job and to be paid for something. Mm. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. But then it was only after speaking to people that did have management, they were like, Soph, you're massively underselling yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, I did a video once in exchange for a pair of straighteners, because I was like, yeah, sure, like those straighteners look great. Yeah. I'll do a whole video in exchange for that. But
there are
some
brands that I would do that with, though. There are brands that like I'd be like, oh, you know what, I really want that product, I really like it, or I really like you as a brand. Yeah. Just ship me your products and I'll talk about you because I use you anyway.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is I feel like brands doing that to smaller creators now is completely unacceptable. I feel like there needs to be some like legal limit, or like some kind of like, I don't know. There needs to be something that, I don't know.
It's because it's not spoken about widely. But that's the thing though. People know that influencers make a lot of money when they get really, really high levels of followers. And so people underselling themselves, though, is still really common. It's like I had someone messaged me and they were like, because I saw I did a sponsorship with this company who I really, really liked and I don't work for them anymore. But they were like, they've offered me this and this. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. Mm. That's absolutely ridiculous. And but because they'd never done it before. They've never had someone approach them. I was like, that's really underselling yourself. And you can see their skill and their talent and how much work they put in out of their own time. It was insane. It was ridiculous. Mm. It's like, we'll send you this eyeshadow palette and we want this many videos on Instagram, this many YouTube videos. We want you to have it in this. It's like, are you kidding? What, one palette?
Yeah.
And you want all that?
No. Yeah. Social Blue Book is a really good platform to go for because it breaks down all your analytics and everything and tells you why you are worth that. You wouldn't do it. Before you got management.
I thought that's... I was offered a job and I put in my fingers. I was like, no fucking way.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for that.
It was like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I was like, I was like, just ask for it.
I wouldn't feel comfortable now, though. I wouldn't feel comfortable now.
Oh, no, that's why I'm glad we got management. That's why,
exactly. I'll be like, no, I'm never in a million years. I'll be like, just send me a box of food.
Yeah. Honestly, me too. Rations. Yeah.
Send me toilet rolls for a week and I'll
do it. Let's talk about, so before we join management, I was with a lot of MCN, so multi-channel networks. Mm. They are companies who sign your channel to their network and takes ad revenue, the majority of them for no real reason.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say the names because they're not around anymore. Yeah. Style Hall I was with. Yep. I was with Unilad. I was also with Icon Network, so the American version of Icon. Icon were amazing. They flew me out to LA.
Yeah, they were great.
I would say like the stuff I did with them, I got my money's worth. Yeah. They were really good. Nice. The other two, not so much, but they also represent themselves as management. Whilst I did get a few jobs through Unilad, they were still taking money with me from me for no real reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
We are part of an MCN now, but because that's joint, it's our management's MCN, so it kind of more than works out well.
And there's an honest one and there's a dishonest one.
That's the thing.
And I was this one still exists, so this is all allegedly and in my opinion and from my, what I perceived as experience, and it was Broadband TV. And they approached loads of people. And when they approached me, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, they were like, we'll give you the tools to grow your channel. Uh-huh. Analytics.
Deep dive into analytics.
That sounded like a biscuit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's incredible. I want to get my channel growing and then they're going to give me all this support and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then they signed me and I didn't hear from them for like maybe like 6 months until I emailed them. I was like, can I talk to someone about how to like grow my channel or do something with my channel? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. We'll set up a call and nothing. Mm-hmm. And it took me, I think about 3 years to get out of a contract with them. Mm. And I was bad-mouthing them everywhere. I was talking shit about them.
Allegedly, supposedly.
And they were like, we give you all these tools. All they did was give me a subscription to, like, this service that can give you uncopyrighted music.
Mm. Yeah.
That was growing my channel.
And then this other one, it helps make GIFs.
You do have to be careful.
And if people know that, I mean, they could sign loads of people with very small amount of followers and get £1 from them a month, £1 from them, and then have, you know, loads and loads of people, and it all adds up. And there's so many people doing it. And so the promise of let's grow your channel is like, shit, of course.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lie.
It's a pure lie. Yeah. Unless they can actually manage you and actively show you that they can get you work and get you jobs and meet these people from this company and have a talk with these people from this company, then why else should you trust them, you know?
Well, Style Hall, who I was with, which I don't think are around anymore, had...
Yeah, they... Died.
Thousands. They died. They are dead. Completely dead. They had thousands of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Thousands and thousands of people in the UK alone, and they were across the world.
And here's the thing, that broadband TV, allegedly in my opinion, you can just sign up to it.
Yeah, you can just, yeah.
And I was with, Harper's Bazaar had one, and I was with them for like a while, and I never heard from them again.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Harper's Bazaar,
Huffington Post.
Huffington
Post, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Huffington Post is a completely different.
That's a different thing. Sorry, Harper's. But yeah, they just
bad mouthing this.
Yeah, for no reason.
That was a word.
Yeah, there's so many. And I remember I got tons of emails being invited to every single MCN ever, pretty much. That's what I felt like. They would email every day, like, do you want to join us? And I was like, no, thanks. Because at the start, I thought, oh, that sounds nice. They say they're going to help me grow my channel. Yeah. And, you know, they'll help me, like, get work and stuff. But then I had a friend that was with, I think it was Style Hall. And I remember she was locked into a contract with them for like 4 years something. Uh-huh. And she was like, I'm trying to leave because since I joined them, they haven't got me any brand work at mm-hmm. all, literally mm-hmm. none. Mm-hmm. And they were taking like 20% of her AdSense or something, or 15% or mm-hmm. actually maybe it was even like 30%. Because there's different percentages of what they would take. And they were just taking that money and doing nothing. And so she wrote to them and said, I'd like to leave. And they basically said, sorry, you signed this contract. You've got another 3 years left or
whatever. That's exactly what happens to me.
And so you have to be so careful if you are starting as a YouTuber and wanting to sign with an MCN.
Yeah. I remember with Style Hall, I sent a really shitty email at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm waking up and getting an email from them because I always wake up to like wee at like 4 a.m. or something like that. I remember sitting on the toilet, like typing this really shitty email, like accusing them of fraud and stuff. Mm. And the next day, they were like, really sorry, like, we'll let you go. I was like, thank you.
Really?
Yeah, I was really lucky because that's definitely not the case for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I would say, just general advice, if you're going to join an MCN, make sure they're acting as management. Make sure you have, you know, look up reviews. Actually, I just put on YouTube BBTV and then so many shitty videos came up. Like, I'm still on my contract. I'm still trying to get out of it. Mm. I wrote them a threatening letter. I threatened legal action. Mm. Not that I was going to do anything. And they were like, oh, sorry, but you're still on your contract.
If you have been, you know, invited to join one of these networks, I would say to anybody that's just starting out, do your research. So look them up, like you said, on YouTube. Try and speak to other creators that are also on that network. See what they think of it.
Yeah.
And if you do have to sign a contract, don't just skim through it. Okay, we all do it.
Yeah.
Read through it, but also I would say get someone else to read through it as well, because they might see something that you've missed, and then they can be like, hang on a minute, this bit, what did you see this bit?
Yeah.
You know, I would say get someone else to read it as well.
100%. I think
it doesn't have to be a lawyer, like a friend.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Like someone who is used to reading contracts or like any
or a lawyer, if you happen to know one.
Exactly. Is your dad a lawyer? But we're used to having to scroll through things and just scrolling down and being like, accept. But again, it's that mix of exciting opportunity. Mm. It's like multi-level marketing companies where they're like, join us and we'll make your life grow.
Yeah.
Mm. I would say you are perfectly capable of growing your YouTube channel to a substantial amount of followers without having to have any support from any professionals and even sponsored content, you know, no gifted products. Like, I noticed a lot of people on Twitter recently especially are like, oh my god, if only this brand would see me, and if only I can get on this PR list and reach now. That's not the only thing. It's a really great perk, but it's not the only thing about being an influencer, getting free product. I mean, like, any money you do make from in the beginning, I would say reinvest back in by buying product
or
your setup, all that kind of stuff. But just be careful and know your worth. Without sounding cheesy, I think knowing that influencers are
valuable
and worth money, it's modern day advertising. So if you're going to take a job, realize that you are worth however much the internet is telling you.
And don't base it on subscriber count. It's how many people view your videos. You can have 100 subscribers, and if 100,000 people view your videos, you're good to go.
You're good to go,
Join that MCN. No.
I mean, you're probably doing something wrong if you've got 100 subscribers and 100,000 views, but sure.
People just love to hate watching you.
Maybe ask people to subscribe in your next video.
Do you know what? Actually, the moment I had one of these things, right, where I was about to give up on YouTube. I was like, I'm going to pay this guy to look through my channel and go through my analytics and tell me what I need to do. He was like, you need to start telling people to subscribe. I was like, that's not going to make a difference. I was like, that's not going to make a difference. The moment I told people to start subscribing, it made a huge difference.
Really?
Yeah. And he was like, change your thumbnails, do this, literally overnight. Everything changed. Crazy. I posted a video with all the new. It was absolutely insane. It was like 2 days before our birthday. It was
James.
Thank you, everyone. And I just remember, like, honestly, like, those little tips are actually really good. Mm. If a lot of people are doing it,
that information is online. Did you ever, when you started out, were you... I guess there wasn't a blueprint of what to do.
No.
Where it wasn't like people deep diving, it wasn't channels dedicated to it, or was there? I don't even know.
I don't really remember, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think I did watch a couple videos that were like, how to make a thumbnail.
Right.
But I just sort of did what I wanted to do. I don't think there was anybody that I necessarily was like, oh, I need to do it in this sort of style. Right. I just think I just did it my own way.
Are you like an analytic? How do you say that?
Analytic.
Thank you. Thank you both.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Are you like an analytic?
I can't say it.
Analytic person.
Analytical.
Do you check them on your page? Oh, fuck.
Do you check your analytics?
Yes. Or are you like, no, I just rather just get on with it and do whatever?
I used to be a lot more obsessed with it than I am now. Yeah. I mean, actually, my views have gone down a lot, so maybe I should be...
Oh, mine too. I think there's something going on at the moment.
There is something going on.
Yeah. Yeah. But I used to check them. Yeah. Please watch me. No, watch it. I used to check them every single day. Yeah. And do you guys use Social Blade?
Yeah. I still do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I stopped using Social Blade when they stopped doing like the live sort of subscriber count. And they only do it per 10,000
exactly.
subscribers or something. Mm-hmm. But I used to obsessively check that mostly to see how my views were doing, see how my subscribers were doing. But I don't so much anymore, really. Since YouTube changed that whole thing, I've sort of relaxed a lot with it. And I just kind of do my thing. And obviously, sometimes I will check to see how a video is doing. But I don't really look... I don't really dive that deep into it. But maybe I should, you know?
I don't understand it. And I feel like when I get wrapped up in it... You know, the studio app, whatever it's called?
What's yeah.
it called? Oh. As soon as I put up a video, it's like, oh, everyone hates your video. And no one's watching. Oh, and I'm like, well, fuck, I don't want to live anymore.
Yeah,
and
that's just the like, worst.
It's, too much. It's awful.
And I feel like it... But then you look at it and it's like, actually, no, the numbers are fine. Like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's me. That's how I usually do. Mm. And maybe it's like...
But the way they word
200
it.
Less. I know. Yeah. No one's looking good.
So
and
mean.
Then when you get a video that's higher than usual, it does like this celebration of confetti and shit. And it's like, can we calm down and like bring it back a little bit?
Stop patronizing me.
Yeah.
I know what I can do.
It is. I think you can get caught up in. I do hear some, like, see some people and they tweet things and do things and it's like, oh, this, my analytics were this month and it's going up and now it's going down. It's like, just calm down and maybe think about
it. I find that every month I'll have, or every couple months, it's like this.
Yeah, all I was about
time.
To say.
All the time.
It's constantly dipping and growing.
I'm just over it now. Every month I'll have that week where I'm like, well, this is it. My career's over. No one's watching. And then the next week, it'll be like highest views I've ever got. And then it'll be down
honestly.
Again. It's just, it's just like, I think you can definitely overthink it. When it's your job and you have people to pay and you're making money, you know.
There is that pressure, though, if it's like, oh, you know what, I'm doing really well. But what if, like, everyone just decides they don't like you?
Yeah.
Like, what if one day everyone's like, oh, actually... You're not my kind of person and everyone stops watching you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a fear.
Let's finish it on that good note.
On that really positive note.
That we're all going to fail
someday.
Nothing
can last forever.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was lovely.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Where can we find you on the socials?
You can find me on YouTube. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Soph
Does Life on YouTube, Soph on Instagram, and Soph Does Life on Twitter and TikTok.
Perfect. And of course, we will link... Oh, fucking TikTok. I always forget about that.
I forget TikTok too.
I will start one day.
One day.
Start doing this.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Yes, we want to see the dances.
Or doing your lipstick.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And of course, we'll link everything as well to you for everyone to check
out. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Fake goodbye.
Fake goodbye.
Bye.
Well, there we go. Wouldn't you have it? What a lengthy discussion about everything.
Listen,
we are recording this like a week later.
Listen, we hope you enjoyed that episode and just kind of like, enjoyed it, you know?
Yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, we will of course leave links to all of Soph's social media, all of that kind of thing, on our Instagram post at the Double Cleanse Podcast. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it. You said it like you were going to say more then, but I think that's literally it.
Yeah, I think it is. And from there you can find our individual socials also.
Yeah, thanks for finishing that.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Yeah, no, thank you so much.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.